Now, without any further delay, I would like to introduce today's first presenter, Todd Needham. Todd, you now have the floor.
Thank you, Heather. My name is Todd Needham, and I'm a product manager for Windows HPC Server 2008. I'm going to take the first few minutes of today's webcast to tell you about Microsoft's vision and product line. First of all, we work with customers every day worldwide and partners who are telling us what they're looking for in an HPC solution. The challenges that they're having as developers for parallel development, they're looking for easier programming models and libraries to ease that development, and they're looking to enable more developers to easily express parallelism. End users are telling us that they spend too much time mired in the technology, and they're looking for solutions that allow them to integrate with their existing workflows and work with their existing desktop tools. Administrators tell us that they're looking for easier tools for deployment, maintenance, troubleshooting, performance monitoring, and they want integrated solutions that work with the rest of their existing IT infrastructure. We combine that with another problem we've got, which is the fact that the traditional programming model, developers have been looking for increases in performance due to more transistors and higher clock speeds in processors. However, what we see today from Intel and AMD are that we're moving to a fixed clock speed and more cores per processor. So basically, the free lunch for traditional performance improvements is over, and developers are finding they have to take advantage of concurrency and parallelism to continue extracting performance gains from new generations of processors. Microsoft's vision for HPC is really threefold. We want to reduce the complexity for users, for administrators. We want to take HPC more into the mainstream and enable new classes of applications and new industries to take advantage of the additional computational power. And we want to build a broader ecosystem around HPC, increasing the number of parallel applications and codes, helping improve and work with third parties to offer new development tools, libraries, and languages, and basically drive a larger universe of end users, developers, and systems administrators into the HPC world. We launched our first product in 2006. It was called Windows Compute Cluster Server 2003. It was built on then our current version of Windows Server 2003. It was our first entry into HPC, and it was really designed at the 32 to 64 node personal or workgroup type of cluster. We spent a lot of time working with developers and customers, looking at what they needed to ease parallel development and deployment of systems like this with their existing IT infrastructures. And it was your basic entry-level supercomputing solution. Our current product is Windows HPC Server 2008. It's built on top of Windows Server 2008. We support both the traditional batch types of HPC, but also highly interactive and financial services-oriented HPC as well. We have larger cluster support. We have out-of-the-box scaling to about 256 nodes on a cluster, although we have customers that are running thousands of nodes in a single cluster as well. We also have regular entries into the top 500, which is the public list of the world's fastest supercomputers. We have better integration with Windows-based users through Active Directory and cluster discovery. And we've been working with a number of third-party developers to provide better tool support. After our first release in 2006, we found that our performance was not where it needed to be and our scalability was not. And so we've made performance a perennial focus for our Windows HPC server solutions. In 2006 and 2005, with our pre-release run, we were looking at about 43% efficiency on our cluster on Linpack. With 2008, we're now up to 77% efficiency, which ties for the best efficiency on the top 500 list today. And as a matter of fact, in November 2008, we worked with the Shanghai Supercomputing Center in China to post our first top 10 supercomputer running Windows HPC server. We're currently in development and in beta with the next release of our HPC server product, which will be called Windows HPC Server 2008 R2. As you might suspect, it's built on top of Windows Server 2008, Windows Server 2008 R2. We are testing regularly out of the box for out of the box capabilities at 1,000 plus nodes, and with virtual nodes, double that. So we regularly scale to over 1,000 nodes with that. We've evolved our services-oriented architecture support, the interactive scheduler, for scale and programmability, including the ability to do something we call fire and recollect, which will allow a client to reserve nodes on a cluster, fire off a job, and then disconnect, and then come back later and reconnect, and the job will still be there and pick up right where they left off. The SOA scheduler is now tied into our queuing system to enable that. We also just announced earlier this week Visual Studio 2010 with parallel extensions and support for .NET 4.0. This includes things like our parallel task library, parallel and remote debugging capabilities for both managed and unmanaged code. And with the next release of our product, we're including a framework for executing parallel Excel called Distributed Services for Microsoft Excel 2010. Just to dwell into that just a little bit, we've enabled an entire class of computational scientists who are not programmers with Microsoft Excel on the desktop, and this solution will allow them to scale spreadsheets out onto a cluster. As a couple of examples, we worked with an actuarial company, life insurance company, who had a spreadsheet that took 17,000 records processed in multiple dimensions that used to take 14 hours, and on a 25-node cluster, they're getting that down to 2.5 minutes. Also, another example we had was 1 million records that took 7.5 days is now down to 2 hours. So we're getting superlinear scaling with this Excel framework because you're able to run multiple copies of Excel per node on a cluster. We're also very strongly, as I said, focused on building a stronger ecosystem. This is just a partial list of the industry partners in applications, development tools, codes, and libraries that are available for Windows HPC Server today. And if you're interested in a complete list of all of the applications and codes and tools, you can go to microsoft.com/HPC, and you'll see a link there that will provide you with a complete list sorted by industry of where we're working. And with that, I'd like to turn the show over to David Smith from Revolution Computing. David?
Thank you very much, Todd. That was a really great introduction to a powerful platform that you can have at your disposal for doing high-performance computing, making use of the power of cores distributed across many, many machines. And Todd was talking about examples of thousands of machines there. What I'm going to do is actually turn that around and talk to you about how, with the programming language R, you can write programs for statistical computing and predictive analytics that take advantage of hardware systems like Windows HPC Server. I'm David Smith. I'm from Revolution Computing. I'm the VP of Marketing there. I'm also the editor and writer at the Revolutions blog, which you can see on the URL on your screen right now. I write there every day about the R programming language and computational topics like this. So I do encourage you to check that out. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'm at RevoDavid. If you do want the slides from today's presentation, by the way, they will be available shortly after the session today. You can see a tiny URL link on your screen there, which will lead you to a place you'll be able to download the slides by tomorrow. And as I mentioned, I'm happy to take questions from today's presentations. Just use the text Q&A system, and we'll turn to your questions at the end here. With that, let me jump in. I want to tell you a little bit about Revolution Computing and our Revolution R Enterprise product, which I'll be using for the demonstrations of the parallel computing today. For anybody who's not familiar with R and the R programming language, I'll do a little bit of an introduction to that. Before jumping into how you can make use of multiple processors on a single desktop or workstation to parallelize some computations and get some speed up from that parallel processing. But then I'm going to move into more explicit parallel programming paradigms. First of all, single multi-core processing on a single machine using the R programming language. And then I'll show you how you can easily extend that to distributed processing on the Windows HPC Server platform. After we wrap up, as I said, we'll be able to take any questions you might have. So first of all, let's jump into our first poll. I wanted to get a sense for the people that are in the audience today, whether you're familiar with R and have used R before, and I can see the questions there, the responses are coming in right now. My assumption is that most people will be familiar with R, and I can see that about 80% of respondents are. But I did want to actually jump in and tell you a little bit about a little bit of background about R for anybody who hasn't seen that before. thanks to everybody who responded in that poll. And we'll move ahead. So about 80-20, that's pretty good. For anybody in the group that isn't familiar with art, well, you must have missed this article that was in the New York Times last year. There is a link to this on the PDF version of my slides, so you'll be able to get to that when you download the slides. But it is a great overview of what R is. And in general, it's a data analysis system. It was invented by the two guys that are on your screen right here. That's Robert Gentleman on the left and Ross Harker on the right. They were both statistics professors that were looking to create a new system in the mid-90s for doing statistical computations in a modern programming language. And what they created was R. R is data analysis software. Unlike some other data analysis software you might have used, it's not a menu-driven system, it's not a spreadsheet-based system. It's an actual programming language designed by and for statisticians where you write code that implements data processing and statistical analysis and graphics. It's not just a language, though, that makes R unique. It's actually in a complete environment of not just the programming constructs, a lot of which we'll see today, but actually all the algorithms around that that you also need to do statistical computing. So all the algorithms for accessing data in various formats, tools for the data manipulation, all the statistical computational algorithms you might need, and also the tools for visualizing the data, which is such an important part of predictive analytics and statistical computing today. Now, R is an open source software project, so what that means is it's free to download and use. It's also open. You can get in there and have a look at exactly how everything is implemented in the R language, but I think what's most important about the fact that it's an open source software project is that it's very, very active. There's a community of thousands of contributors around the world who've been extending the R system for many, many years, in particular implementing a lot of the really cutting edge predictive analytic methods that are used in machine learning, all sorts of domains today. For example, a lot of the ensemble methods that are really in hot use right now were first implemented in the R system and are available there today. We estimate that there are more than 2 million users around the world using R, both in academia and in commercial settings. And what that means to you is, you know, as part of this open source project, that you can get help for using R in just about any domain. Whether that's you're using R in financial services or in life sciences or in manufacturing and academia, there are people out there that have almost certainly tackled a problem very similar to yours. And there are, that means there are lots of resources out there on the web that can help you with the use of R. If you want to learn more about R and what those resources are available, there is a link on your screen right now where you can see an archived webinar I gave about R a little while ago and also links to lots of useful resources. As I mentioned earlier on, I work for Revolution Computing. We're the R company. You know, we sort of aspire to be to the R project, what Red Hat is to the Linux project. As part of that, we do produce our own distribution of R called Revolution R Enterprise. You can get a subscription license to that software, which we bundle, where we bundle the open core, open source R project as the core engine. Around some proprietary extensions that we've made to extend in various directions, as we've seen. This is a fully supported distribution of R with our extensions and, of course, validated for use in commercial environments. We do also produce a completely free version of our distribution. That's called Revolution R Community, which is available from our website. And I'll point out a few of those high-performance improvements we've made that are also available in that version. In general, Revolution Computing is also here to support the R community. That's one of my main roles at the company, in fact, is being an evangelist for the R project. That's one of the main purposes of the blog, as I mentioned earlier on. We also have a community portal for users using R, directing them to various resources available for the project. And we also make both technical contributions to the core R engine and financial contributions to the R project and the R community. I mentioned that we do have our subscription distribution of R called Revolution R Enterprise. So that current version is version 3. It's 100% compatible with the R language, specifically R2.9.2. And what that means is that those, you know, more than 2,000 community third-party packages are all available for free download to use with that version and are compatible with it. But in terms of the things that we actually layer on top of the core R project, One of those things on the Windows platform is a brand new graphical user interface. It's built upon the Visual Studio platform, which is really designed for people programming in the R language to speed up the process of creating code in the R language and debugging code in the R language. But the things I'm going to be focusing on today are the performance aspects of the improvements we've made. For example, making it so that just out of the box, R programs will use multiple CPUs on your PC or laptop to run faster than they would otherwise. We also support the 64-bit Windows platform, which means that you can use all of the available RAM and enables you to process very large data sets on the Windows side of things. And I'll be going into some of the parallel programming tools that we've added to the R language, which allow you to make use of computing resources on multiple computers in a cluster to speed computations on large data sets. I'm going to be using Revolution R Enterprise 3 for Windows in the demonstration later on today. I just wanted to give you a quick tour of the interface so you'll see what I'm doing when I get there. On the top right-hand corner of the screen, you can see the code editor. It's a syntactic code editor built on the Visual Studio model. I'll be running some scripts from that window a little bit later on. On the bottom left-hand side, you can see the R command line. It's an interpreted language where I'll type commands and results will appear in real time. And on the right-hand side, we can see we have some tools for managing files in projects and objects in the R programming language. Just a little quick cook's tour there. But with that, I wanted to actually get into single machine multiprocessor computing. Otherwise, you know, how Revolution R Enterprise makes use of all the cores when doing some computations in the R language. The thing is that if you have a laptop on your desk right now, chances are it has more than one processor, or more likely it has a dual core processor, which basically means that the operating system can run two computations simultaneously. Now, you would think that would speed things up, but R for Windows, if you just download it from the R Project website, will only ever use one of those cores for its computations today. So you're not actually making use of all the processing power available to you on your laptop. One of the changes that we've made to the R Project in Revolution R Enterprise is that we link it with multi-threaded Intel libraries, multi-threaded libraries from Intel, which optimize many of the operations that you naturally do in the R programming language, specifically linear algebra operations like matrix multiplications and inverses and vector operations, so that on a multi-core machine, all of those cores can be used simultaneously. You don't need to modify any of your R code to do this. This just happens naturally. So let me give you an example. For those people that aren't familiar with the R programming language, what I'm doing in this code that you can see on the top of the screen here is calculating the singular value decomposition. This is a matrix analysis on a random matrix of size 3,000 by 3,000. So I'm generating 3,000 by 3,000 random normal numbers using the rnorm function. I'm wrapping those numbers into a matrix with 3,000 rows and, of course, therefore 3,000 columns, and then using the SVD function to calculate that singular value decomposition. Now, if I just download the latest version of R from Windows from the R Project website and run that computation and time it, just using the wall clock, that takes on my machine about 4 minutes and 20 seconds. And if we actually run the Windows Task Manager, you know, halfway through that process, you can see on my laptop I have two CPUs, but one of those CPUs is completely idle, while the other one was idle until I started the calculation, and then it jumped up to about 100%. So on average for the entire machine, I'm only using 55% of the available computing power to do that calculation. If we do that exact same calculation in Revolution R Enterprise 3, you can see it actually takes just 1 minute and 14 seconds. And part of the reason for that is that it's using both of those CPUs. Both of them are maxed out to 100%, and I'm using all the processing power available on my machine. Another part of that is that the libraries themselves that we link to are optimized to take advantage of pipelining and the Intel chipset architecture, so they're inherently faster than algorithms that will be used otherwise. So even if you only have one core, you would expect some speed-ups in this situation as well. And, of course, you can extend that to a 4-core or an 8-core machine and get similar kinds of speed-ups. Just to give you some more concrete numbers on that, Just having a look at some of the calculations you can do. For example, if you do matrix multiplication on a large matrix, and by large, you can have a look at the specific benchmarks I'm measuring on our website. On a one-core machine, you can go down from 318 seconds to 43 seconds. Speeding that up to a four-core machine, you get a little over a four-time speed up for overall a comparison of 32 times versus, you know, the base R distribution. Similar types of speed ups for Cholesky factorization, singular value decomposition, principal components analysis, linear discriminant analysis. These are all things that either you will commonly find yourself doing in the R language or behind the scenes functions that you're using, like the statistical modeling functions, are using these tools and getting similar kinds of speed ups. Just to look at some other benchmarks, you can actually find a nice suite of benchmarks for R at this research site at AT&T, maintained by Simon Urbanek from the R core group. There's a set of matrix calculations. You can see similar kinds of speeds up there on a four-core machine. I didn't actually run these ones on a one-core machine. If you're using functions that do matrix operations like SVD, get some good speed ups there as well. But interestingly, there's also a set of benchmarks there just about general program control, for loops and iterations and those types of things that aren't doing linear algebra behind the scenes. And you can see that in that situation, we're not getting really any speed up at all. And that's because these libraries only have an effect for those types of high-performance mathematical computations. If you're not doing those, you don't get a benefit from those particular libraries. But I'm actually going to spend the rest of today's presentation talking about if you do have loops in your code that are doing general R programming that takes a lot of time, how can you speed up those types of computations? And that's when we'll look at parallel programming tools. Just let me find my slide here. Okay. By the way, I just want to take a quick aside. You might have noticed in that example I gave earlier on, I had a fairly specific matrix size, 3,000 by 3,000. Why didn't I go any bigger? And the reason why was because I wanted to compare it to the base R from the R project. Unfortunately, that version is only 32-bit on the Windows platform today. And so that means that even if I have a lot of RAM, and on this particular machine I have 3 gigabytes of RAM, I cannot allocate particularly large vectors. I have a limitation from the Windows operating system itself. So when I actually tried to run that command using a 5,000 by 5,000 matrix, I actually got an error message telling me that even though I had the RAM available, I didn't have access to that. That's resolved when I use the Revolution R Enterprise 3 version on the 64-bit Windows platform. So we can actually access as much RAM that I have and even more when I make access to swap space. So just a little aside there that if you're thinking about doing analysis on large data sets in memory, a 64-bit platform is a good choice because it does give you access to a lot more RAM for your computation. It doesn't make things speed up necessarily, but it does give you access to larger data sets. So with that little aside, let's turn to simple parallel programming tools in Revolution R. And specifically, I'm going to have a look at a new operator that we introduced to the R language called foreach. Now, foreach is an operator in the parallel R libraries, and that's a collection of R, a name we give to a collection of R libraries that we created for parallel programming in the R language. And specifically, I'll be looking at one command called foreach. What these libraries enable is, first of all, local multiprocessor computing. And in fact, you can do this with our parallel R Lite libraries that are available for free in Revolution R. But once you've written a program that takes advantage of the multiple cores on a single machine, you can then generalize that program very easily, as we'll see, to actually distribute that computation over multiple machines on a cluster. So if you have a Windows HPC server, you'll be able to distribute those computations across all the nodes in that cluster, as we'll see in a minute. Just some technical info, this is actually dependent on the network space's shared memory server. That's something that we created and bundled with our Revolution R Enterprise product, and that takes advantage of some sort of the deeper level parallel programming. So I'm not going to get into that shared memory concept here. I'm going to stay at the relatively simple level. Okay, so let me give you a simple example about how this foreach loop. For those of you that program in R, you'll recognize a for loop. For those of you who don't, it's pretty straightforward. I'm just looping over a variable j to through the numbers 1 to 4 and just doing a basic hello world example of printing the square root of those numbers. If I translate that code just slightly to use a for each loop as well, you can see it's a similar kind of syntax, you know, with the introduction of this do par operator, and then I'll be bracketing all of the statements that I want to run through this loop within the braces, as you can see there. So this is a, you know, trivial example just to calculate the first four square roots, 1 square root, 2 square root, 3, and 2 is the square root of 4, and it prints out those results. For those of you that are programmers, one wrinkle here is that while with a for loop you have to accumulate your results within the loop, a for each loop is more like an lapply or an apply loop, and it actually has a result, and the result of that loop is the calculation that you want to maintain. You might be interested to notice that this particular calculation gave me a warning message at the end. Executing do par sequentially, no parallel backend registered. So that should give you a hint as into what's to come, in that while I can use this for each loop as just an ordinary programming construct within the R language, it actually does have its own benefits from a programming standpoint as well. It's not going to give me any speed ups on a single core machine. But if I do the same calculation on a multi-core machine, I do have the ability to tell it to run instances of the iterations of that loop in parallel. So I can do multiple calculations at the same time, making use of those multiple cores, and thereby speed up the computation. So this is particularly effective in those situations where I'm doing a calculation that doesn't do linear algebra, that automatically uses the multiple cores. This is the way to make it use the multiple cores. So let's talk about how we can actually speed up some code with the for-each programming construct. I hinted at this already, but when I use this do par operator, its behavior depends on what's called a registered parallel backend. Basically, I declare in advance how the R programming language should parallelize that computation. So by default, it's going to run it in sequence, but I have the ability to tell it to use some backend tools to run it in parallel and as many iterations as I declare. We basically designed this to be modular in the sense that we wanted to make it possible so you could write code just in ordinary R that runs in sequence and then deploy that code on a multi-core box or in a cluster that would then run in parallel. So we have what we call, there's a function called registerDoSeq. That's the default, and if I declare that function in advance, things are going to run in sequence. But I also have an SMP function, registerDoSMP, for a local multi-core machine to run those things on the local parallel cores. Or I could just change that command in advance to register what we call our network spaces backend to run those things in parallel on a distributed cluster like Windows HPC Server. So let's have a look at that as like a little example. I'm going to run a poll now. I'd like you to tell me if your birthday, regardless of the year, happens to be on January the 6th. Now, we have, let me see, about 77 people on the call today. It happens to be the case that my birthday is on January the 6th, and according to the people that have responded, an additional two people have also shared my birthday. So welcome to the Capricorn Club, guys out there. That's actually a fairly surprising result to me. Even though there are only 77 people on the call, it actually would be a fairly surprising that anybody would share the same birthday as me. I'll actually calculate exactly what that is going to be in a little while. But I want to actually extend that question a little bit more to say, you know, all of the 77 people that are in this virtual conference room today, what are the chances that any pair of us share any birthday, not just January the 6th, but all those people that don't share my birthday? Do you happen to share a birthday with anybody else on the call? Now, anybody who's done a Stats 101 course or a probability course might have come across this example. It's the famous birthday problem. It's pretty easy to calculate just using combinatorics, but I want to have some fun and actually calculate this using a simulation. Simulations are, you know, my go-to tool for solving complex problems these days, programming in R. It's easy just to simulate a particular model or situation thousands and thousands of times and then calculate any statistic from it to try and estimate a model or prove a point. I also want to do that just to give you some introduction to the R programming language here as well. I'm going to create a new function in R called birthday. It's a function of the number of people in the room, in this case 77 people in the room. What I am then going to do is simulate a room of 77 people using the sample function, and I'm going to randomly assign a birthday from 1 to 365 to each of those people, and then count the number of people in that room that have the same birthday using the duplicated function in the R language. So the result from this birthday function is going to be the probability that given a room of n people, what's the probability that any two of them share the same birthday? Then I'm going to use my for each function to loop through rooms of various size, from a room with just one person in it to a room with 100 people in it, and do this simulation to calculate what the probability would be. And if you haven't seen this problem, the results are actually quite surprising. So with that, I'm actually going to jump into Revolution R Enterprise. Hopefully you should be able to see that on your screen coming up in just a moment. First of all, you remember earlier on that I mentioned there were 77 people in the room. I can calculate the probability that given 77 people in the room, what are the chances that anybody shares my birthday, January the 6th, just using a simple probabilistic calculation. So the chances of getting one person sharing my birthday was about 20%, and we got two. So that's actually fairly surprising, but coincidences happen. More interestingly, though, is with my birthday function. I actually wrote this in the script editor up here, and I can run that code to define a new function in the R language and find out if there were 77 people in the room, what are the chances that any two of them had the same birthday? And the answer come back, it's actually certain that two of us share the same birthday. And we know that was already the case because we did the poll, and it happens to be at least January 6th and maybe some others as well. It's interesting, though, to see how that probability changes as the number of people in the room changes. So let's actually use our for each package. I'm going to actually load that into memory using the require function in the R language. I'm going to register sequential operation as a back end for my loop. So from now on, every time I do the for each loop, it's just going to run in sequence, just like an ordinary for loop. And now I'm going to run through those 100 rooms with different numbers of people in them, do the simulation for each number of people in the room, and then calculate how long it took to do those 100 simulations. And this took 5 seconds. Now, you might notice that for each simulation, I'm actually generating 1,000 tests, so it's actually fairly small. But the total amount of time it took was 5 seconds. But now I want to do this in parallel. I have a two-core machine. So I'm just going to declare that I want to create two workers in the background to actually do my simulations. I just call this registerDoSMB function to set things up. It's actually warning me that I've done this a few times already, so I have some sessions running in the background already, but that's not a problem. Now I'm going to run exactly the same code. I haven't modified my code at all. I'm doing the same loop, the same simulation. But now, because it's running two of those simulations at any one time in parallel, we've gone down from about 5 seconds to do that computation to about 3 seconds to do that computation. I really cut down the number of simulations here, so it just didn't take too long while we were sitting and waiting. So if I actually go to my next slide, that should be popping up in just a minute. Oh, dear, it's popped back to the screen. Give me 1 second just to get back here. Okay, there we go. I actually bumped that up to 10,000 simulations as opposed to 1,000 simulations, just so it took a decent amount of time. Same thing, running it in sequence took 44 seconds. If I do that using the SMP backend on my local machine, it takes about half the time, 26 seconds. So basically, if you're doing something like this where you're doing lots and lots of big simulations that can be run independently, you can actually parallelize the problem and reduce the amount of time you need to take pretty much linearly. There's not too much overhead there. Now, I'm also going to turn to what's called the network spaces backend, which does allow us to generalize this problem across independent machines rather than on the same machine. It takes a little bit longer when I do that, even if I run that on a single machine, because there's a little bit more overhead to the clustering system, but it's still quite good performance here. But we'll see how that's used for clustering in just a second. By the way, if I actually have a look at the results of that calculation, and for rooms of various sizes across the x-axis, calculating the probability that there's going to be two people that share the same birthday for each of those room sizes, you might be interested to note that it only takes about 24 people in a room before the probability that two people share the same birthday is about 50-50. So if you're in a room with more than about 25 people, chances are somebody there or two people there share the same birthday. All right, so let's move on to the next part of the presentation, where we're going to move on from just doing those computations on a single machine, as I just did, to actually doing distributed parallel programming with the network spaces backend that I mentioned from Revolution Computing and Windows HPC Server from Microsoft. So this is really the situation where you want to do some meaty problems because Parallel R, as we've seen, enables the parallelization of computationally intensive R code to speed up things when you're running over multiple cores. Now, so far, we've had all those cores on a single machine, but with Windows HPC Server, we can actually extend the reach of this Parallel R system to run on cores that are spread over multiple machines within a cluster. Now, there are lots of ways to do this, actually, with a Parallel R. You know, we could actually specify all those machines explicitly and give them names and so on. We'll see that in a second. But one of the real benefits of doing this with Windows HPC Server is that the server facilities hide a lot of the administration resource allocations from the R user. You don't need to worry about specifically what the names of the machines are or how many available. That will just all get allocated to you automatically behind the scenes, because the Windows HPC Server actually chooses for you unused cores anywhere on the HPC cluster and will run your R computations on them for you. This is particularly important if you're actually sharing that cluster with other users in your domain or workplace or whatever. There might be other people running jobs on the cluster at the same time. What this means is you will automatically get unused cores on your cluster, or will even queue up the computations until a cluster is available to you. So you can manage that shared resource amongst multiple users. The example I'm giving is actually a fairly small cluster. It's actually one we have set up in our development shop in Seattle, so nothing like the thousands of nodes that Todd was talking about earlier on. We just have one head node that controls the distributions of computations. That's a two-core machine with a 2.5 gigahertz Xeon processor and 6 gigs of RAM. But most of the jobs will actually get allocated to these individual workers. These are identical four-core Intel Xeon machines with 8 gigabytes of RAM. So overall, I have 16 cores available to me on the workers and additional two cores on the head node. So let's actually have a look at using those. Skip to slide there. Let me just get to the next one. So here's how I do that same birthday computation I just saw, distributed now across multiple machines within that HPC cluster. All I need to do is, rather than doing the SMP backend I did before, I'm going to use a new backend called RegisterDoNWS. One bit of configuration I have to do before that is to declare how many workers I actually want to work on this problem that are going to be in the cluster. And here I'm just going to use 10 for example purposes. Could be as many workers as I want. They will be distributed amongst the individual cores on the worker nodes within the cluster. And I'm going to be using this launch equals option to the slave function. This is actually a general parameter available to me to control how jobs get distributed out to the cluster. So if you're using another cluster that uses, say, Condor, you can configure it to use that as well. In my case, I'm going to actually configure it to use HPC Server's job scheduling system, as we'll see in just a second. But again, after I set up my backend, as I've done in these three lines of code, it's exactly the same code to actually do my simulation, but now it gets distributed across the cluster. Just a little bit of detail for those that are interested in actually how the jobs get served out. I'm using this HPC serve function, which I used in the previous slide as my launch function. Most of this code is just general setup and validation that's, you know, environment variables have been set and so forth. This is the key function. I'm actually just calling out to the job command line function at HPC server, which submits the job to the cluster and then allocates it to a particular core up to the limit of the number of cores that I had specified in my slave function. I don't try that there not to go through the code if it's available to you, should anybody want to try that themselves. Just by the way, the alternative to that, as I kind of alluded to earlier on, is I can actually get into the HPC server and have a look at the machines I have available to me in my particular case. You know, for my cluster up in Seattle, there's only four machines with pretty simple names, Compute, OO3, and so forth. You know, the real advantage here is that, you know, we used to just set up ad hoc clusters here, just with random machines around the place. And whenever we set up a cluster with network spaces, we'd have to explicitly nominate the names. We'd have to, you know, make sure nobody else was using those machines at the same time. Now we don't have to worry about any of that because the HPC server automatically allocates our jobs to available nodes within the cluster. I'm not going to do the birthday example here because it's kind of trivial. It's more of a sort of an illustrative example. Let's have a look at something a bit more meaningful on the Windows HPC server. This is a financial backtesting example. My goal is to create myself an automated trading rule for trading in, let's say, Microsoft stock. And we're going to use Microsoft stock from basically the beginning of last year to the end of February this year. And the basic rule I'm going to have is I'm going to put everything into Microsoft stock until I see a trigger, which is going to tell me to switch over to a safe investment. Safe is relative these days, but let's say it's 10-year in treasury bonds. And the signal I'm going to use to determine whether to switch back and forth between treasury bonds and Microsoft is going to be something called a moving average convergence divergence oscillator. But basically what that means is if in the short term Microsoft is ahead of its performance in the long term, then I'm going to switch over. And what short term and long term and for a while means in this case is three parameters, which are going to be referred to as N fast, N slow, and N sig. Don't need to worry too much about the details here, except basically to know, you know, as we look at Microsoft over, you know, basically the past year, it's been pretty steadily gaining since everybody went down in the fall of last year. Don't know how well you can see this on your screen, but you can see the short-term and the long-term moving averages of the gray and red lines. Basically, when the gray line goes above the red line, that's our signal to switch. And we're going to automate all this process using R code to do the calculations from some community-generated financial libraries and estimating these parameters, fast and slow and signal, using an optimization on the parallel core. Just quickly, having a look at what we could get out of this, all this is going to be focused around not the raw stock prices, the raw treasury prices, but the yield or the returns. We can calculate those, again, using simple functions in R, and that in general, you know, beginning at about August last year, Microsoft was in positive territory for returns. The treasury bonds have been generally giving negative returns, but aren't as wildly fluctuating as equities are these days. Here's the R code that we're going to use to actually calculate, given a parameter for fast and for slow and for signal, what the returns are from our trading rule, switching back and forth between Microsoft and the treasury bonds. Pretty simple code there in R to actually do that calculation. Again, I provide that there just for reference for everybody who wants to try this themselves. Let's actually have a look at what we would get from our trading rule if we actually use the values 12 and 26 and 9. And we can see that overall, you know, if we stuck with that rule for the last year, we would have got about a 60% return on our investment, which isn't too bad. Now the question is, can we do better than that? You know, if we switched our trading rule to say it was going to be an 8-day moving average instead of a 12-day moving average for the fast parameter, or a 30-day moving average instead of a 26-day moving average for the slow parameter, and so on, how can we actually tune these values to make sure that our return from the rule would be as high as possible? And that's where the simulation comes in. In this case, it's actually going to be a brute force optimization. Let me get to my next slide. We're going to do a brute force optimization to find the best and fast and slow and NSIG. Best in this time isn't basically determined by our overall return over that period, but the Sharpe ratio. Again, for anybody in the finance side, it might be interesting to see just how easy it is to calculate that Sharpe ratio in R. But this number is actually the one that I'm going to use to calculate as the optimizing value for my simulation. Go to my next slide. There we are. All right. So if we didn't worry about parallel computing here, we could do that optimization just using brute force. Let's try every possible combination of the slow and fast parameters, calculate the sharp ratio, and find out which combination makes it the highest. Just for simplicity's sake, I'm not going to worry about the third parameter, just so I can do 2D graphics and everything is clear. But, you know, I can just using standard for loops in the R language to do this. And you might guess where I'm going here. I'm going to translate one of those four loops to instead be a for each loop. And so what this means is the outer part of this loop is going to be parallelized across the available machines on our cluster. Once again, I set it up. I'm going to use 10 workers on the cluster just for the example, and I'm going to do that using Windows HPC Server. I didn't parallelize the internal loop just really because if I didn't do that, the computation actually doesn't take very long at all. And at that point, the overheads of distributing the computations amongst the machines overweigh the benefits of doing the parallelization. Just as a general rule of thumb, you want the individual iterations of your computations to take, you know, a good minute or more before you're really going to start seeing dramatic benefits from doing this kind of parallelization. When I run that on the HPC server cluster, you can actually jump in with the server tools and have a look at the performance of individual nodes. So I just jumped onto one of these worker nodes, and you can see, as we would expect, each of those nodes are pegging out each of the cores, you know, really using the computing power pool available to me. Something similar is happening on another one of those nodes at this time using another four cores, and then another node is just using two cores because I specified that I just wanted to use 10 for this entire computation. Let's actually have a look at the results. You know, once we iterate over all of these thousands of combinations of the slow parameter and the fast parameter, the color here in this image plot created in R is the sharp ratio, and as you might recall, we wanted to maximize the sharp ratio. The actual maximum happens right down here because of sort of the current climate where treasury bonds aren't giving much in the way of yield or negative yield, and stocks are actually doing fairly well recently. It tends to switch back to the stocks immediately at any sign of gain, just in this particular optimization. Now, of course, the great thing about doing this way is if my computation is taking a long time, I can just throw more resources at it, add more nodes to my computation. And if I just run this on two nodes, the entire computation takes about 300 seconds, my optimization. Moving that to four nodes, it halves the time, gets down to about 150 seconds. And as I add additional nodes to the computation, the computation time decreases in an inverse proportional rule, as you'd expect, until with 16 nodes, it gets down to 50 seconds from the original 300. So lots of benefits for adding new computational resources to this particular problem. So in conclusion, if you haven't thought about doing parallel programming in the R language, I'd recommend you just try. Parallel computing in R with this for each loop is really, really easy. You can just prototype in a sequential mode, even if you don't plan to use parallel programming initially, just by using this for each loop and the do power operator. It runs in sequence by default. What that means is if you ever run that code on a modern laptop or a desktop, you can easily switch it to an SMP backend, like I showed you, to use the processing power of multiple cores on a single desktop. And if you then want to go even further and it's a really meaty job or you expand the number of simulations or you run on more data, you can then expand that to run on Windows HPC Server with the tool that I showed you to use and share cluster computing resources and really dramatically reduce the amount of time required for computations just like this. So with that, I'd like to wrap up with a quick poll. I'd just be interested to hear from those people that are on the call today. If you have projects that you're doing in R today, what kind of projects do you have that can maybe benefit from the parallel computing programming tools you've seen in R and with clustering technology like Windows HPC Server? And looking at the results, and I'm sure you can see on the screen, model estimation actually seems to be one of the big ones. Simulation is actually one of the things that I do a lot of work with in this area as well. You can also do forecasting. If you have a model that does predictions, being able to iterate through a very large prediction data set, that's something that's very easy to parallelize as well. And, of course, data processing tools. There are often situations where your data set can easily be split up into regions or countries or customers, and it's an embarrassingly parallel program to distribute that across multiple machines as well. Okay. Well, thanks, everybody, for your responses there. I'll leave that poll up just for a moment. As we go back to The slides. Just let me get back here. Keep on getting switched out. Moving on. Just to wrap up, if you have questions, obviously we'll turn to the Q&A right now. But if you want to follow up with me personally, my email address is on the screen right there. I'm Revo David. You can also find information about Revolution, our enterprise, at revolutioncomputing.com, and you can keep up with all the news about R on the blog at blog.revolutioncomputing.com. That will be the URL where you'll download the slides. And with that, let me just turn it over to Heather to give a quick refresher on how to ask a question. Heather?
All right. Thank you, David. If you would like to type in your question, you can just click the Q&A menu option. That will open up the Q&A window where you can type in your question and click Ask. And with that, back to you, David.
Okay. Thanks. So let me turn to the first question here. First question I have is, how frequently are you able to keep up with updates to R? So this is in reference to our Revolution R community and Revolution R Enterprise distributions that are built on the open source R project. How frequently are we able to keep up? Our community version, we plan to release that soon after each release of the open source R project, so that will keep in quite close sync. Our enterprise version, as the name suggests, Revolution R Enterprise, lags a little bit behind the R projects. We generally don't release our enterprise version until the next update to the open source R comes out. That gives us time to verify that, you know, it's had some time to shake down in the wild, and it gives us, our development time, some time to validate it for use in commercial environments. So in answer to your question, the community version tracks closely. The enterprise version tends to track a version behind. So thanks for that question. All right. The next question, sorry, I'm just having a little bit of difficulty with the question interface here. Okay. So the next question comes, if I'm using an R package that uses C or Fortran routines, will Revolution R Enterprise still going to use more than one core? So the general answer to that question is no. By default, it's going to use more than one core without changing any of your programming, only if it uses basically the LAPACK libraries, so linear algebra tools. I'm guessing that your R package that calls C or Fortran routines isn't going into LAPACK, so by default the answer is no. But that's when those parallel computing tools come in. So if you use a for each loop and register a parallel backend, and within that for each loop it is calling to your C or Fortran routine, in those situations, yes. It will use the multiple cores, and you can parallelize your problem like that. Thanks for the question. All right, my next question is, do we have a version linked with the ACML library, AMD? And the answer to that is no. We only link with the Intel MKL libraries. We do see actually some fairly significant performance gains even on AMD platforms. But the particular libraries that we use are the ones from Intel. Thanks for that question. The next question I have is, do you plan to support R2.10.1, and when? The answer is yes. We already do support R2.10.1. You can download our community version from the website today. There's a link from revolution-computing.com that is based on R2.10.1. Our current enterprise version is based on R2.9.2. We will upgrade that to R2.10 when the R projects to 11 comes out. As I said, we're always a version behind. All right, Todd, this might be a question for you. Somebody asks, is there a way to rent the HPC on Amazon's cluster with Revolution R Enterprise installed?
That is a very good question. I do see it up there, and I see the person who asked for it. I will open a private chat with you to get more information on it. I don't have the answer handy at my fingertips right now.
Okay.
Thanks, David.
And to answer the Revolution R Enterprise side of that question, the answer is yes, absolutely. We support installing our Revolution R Enterprise on EC2. We've actually done that several times ourselves. So you can set up a cluster on Amazon and install our software. And Todd, as he mentioned, will give you the information about getting that onto an HPC server cluster. All right, we've got time for just one or two more questions. I have another question here asking about, do the parallel computing techniques that I've described help with sort of general statistical models in the R language, like logistic regression and things like that, when you're working with large data sets. The answer to that is to a limited extent at the moment. You do get some benefits in logistic regression, for example, just from the fact that internally R is using some of those linear algebra libraries that parallelize on a single machine. But it doesn't really help in general. It doesn't help with really, really large data sets because you're still bound by R's memory limitations. I did want to mention, though, that that is an active research area for us. We're actually working very hard right now on some pretty exciting new technology for R that enables you to do linear regressions, logistic regressions, you know, data manipulations and other kinds of statistical models on really, really large data sets and have those computations distributed across a cluster. It's not formally announced yet, but keep an eye out in the next couple of weeks. We'll have some exciting news about our scalable high-performance statistical computing tools coming soon for the R language. Okay, and I think I've addressed a lot of the other questions. I'm just flicking through in here. Actually, the last question I'll turn to because we're just about out of time. The question was, what is in Revolution R Enterprise that is not in Revolution R? That's a great question. The only things that you need to subscribe to our Revolution R Enterprise product to get are the Visual Studio-like integrated development environment and debugger and the distributed parallel programming tool. So if you want to use it with Windows HPC Server, you will need to have a Revolution R Enterprise. With that, I will just turn to Todd to ask if he has any concluding words.
No, I'd like to thank everybody for their time. I'll let you know that this session will be recorded and it will be placed up on the web off the Microsoft.com WAC HPC site. I assume we'll post this up on the Revolution site as well.
That's correct. And thank you, everybody, for attending. Thank you, Todd, for the introduction. And thanks for everybody for helping out getting this set up.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's live meeting. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect.